All right, good morning. I will go ahead and call us to order for the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, February 17th, 2015, and ask if everybody would please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
First item on this morning's agenda is public comment number one. This is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items on today's agenda. Is there anybody wishing to do so? Seeing no one moving toward the microphone, we'll move on to agency reports. And the first thing we have is CCJ. Mark, how are you this morning?
Well, thank you.
Thanks for coming over today. Mark, start with the introduction and your title.
I'm Mark Kubik, K-U-B-I-K. I'm the Executive Director at the Center for Creative Justice in Ames. Happy birthday to CCJ. We turned 40 years old last year.
Wow.
You don't look a day over 30.
Thank you. CCJ was actually established way back in 1974. We are the only nonprofit agency offering adult probation services in Story County. In fact, we are the only one of our type in Iowa. And to the best of my knowledge, we are the oldest privatized probation agency in the entire nation. Probation accomplishes two goals, rehabilitation and public safety, rehabilitating the offender while keeping the community safe from further offenses. I think our outcomes will show that we do that. Assigning a client to probation makes sense because it allows the client to remain part of their family, to continue employment, and otherwise remain a productive member of their community. I think we're all better off having these citizens as taxpayers instead of a tax burden. The alternative to probation is simply paying a fine and or serving a jail sentence. We feel that this option offers very little in rehabilitative effort and offers absolutely no supervision. Probation officers hold the client accountable for their actions while helping the client identify needed areas of change. Our probation clients are ordered to many types of programming that can include substance abuse evaluations and treatment, drinking driver schools, mental health evaluations and follow-up treatment, anger management, batterers education programs, and parenting classes. In addition, our probation officers often help clients secure other resources such as employment. Our courts represent our communities, and our courts continue to see CCJ as a very valuable sentencing option here in Story County. We handle more probation cases than the Department of Corrections itself. In calendar year 2014, CCJ was assigned 78% of all the probation cases assigned here in Story County. The remaining 22% were assigned to the Department of Correctional Services. DCS typically only receives offenders who have committed a very serious crime or someone that has a long criminal history. Without CCJ, these clients would not receive probation or the benefits that are offered, and our agency's current active caseload today is 664 clients. I briefly mentioned our outcomes. They remain strong. One is our success rate, and historically between 80 and 90% of our clients successfully complete their probation. In 2014, that number was 85%. Secondly, we started to study recidivism, tracking the number of clients who reoffend after completing our program. And historically, between 85 and 90% of our clients do not reoffend in the following year once they complete probation successfully.
So 85% of 85%.
Right.
Okay.
And in 2012, that number was 90% for us. In calendar year 2014, I'm going to talk about some specific programming outcomes. 94% of our clients that were required to obtain a substance abuse evaluation did obtain one. 93% of our clients that were required to complete substance abuse treatment did complete that. 93% of our clients that were required to complete drinking driver's course did so. 81% of our clients that were required to obtain a mental health evaluation did obtain that. 100% of our clients that were required to complete a mental health treatment program did successfully complete that. 64% of our clients that were required to complete the batterer's education program did so. And 83% of our clients that were required to attend anger management did successfully complete that course.
Mark, why only 64% of those required to complete batterer's education?
Well, my answer is twofold. That's the lowest number we've ever seen. The other is we typically deal with low-risk offenders, and in our agency, that's probably the highest risk of population to supervise.
Mm-hmm.
If we send someone back to court, our judges typically revoke that probation and assign that person to jail. That's why we have big buildings with bars. They're still going to be required to complete the batterer's education program, however.
But as they go back to jail.
Correct.
Yeah.
So the judge works with you guys actually in determining what the probation requirements are, the different types of things that they need to do. Then you all work to with the individuals to set that up and monitor it, and they report back to you guys regularly to see if they're still on track and things of that nature.
That's correct. Every client comes to us with a set of requirements given by the court. Also, every one of our clients has to sign a probation agreement that outlines 18 rules or expectations for them while they're on probation. We do meet with clients regularly. Once a month is typical, more often if there's bumps or problems. And we report any progress or lack of progress to the court. In a hearing, the court would ask our recommendation, and they tend to rely on that strongly since we're the one working with the individual.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Great. In the last fiscal year, CCJ supervised the repayment of over $955,000 in court costs back to the state of Iowa. Many times this will include restitution, which is payment made directly to the crime victim for their financial loss. Services at CCJ are very cost-effective. It costs over $30,000 to house a person in an Iowa prison or a county jail. That cost is paid by the taxpayer. A one-year probation case at CCJ can be handled for as little as $300, and that fee is paid by the client. Mm-hmm. When you do the math, you find out that probation is 1% the cost of incarceration. Just to summarize, every client at CCJ is a person. We've talked a lot about numbers, but we're actually dealing with people. That person is someone who lives and works right here in our communities. They can be our neighbors, our coworkers, our friends, or possibly even members of our family. We feel that every client assigned to CCJ is a reinvestment in our community. I'm very proud of what we do, and I hope you are as well. And I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Well, we are proud of what you do. We appreciate the job you do. I think you hit the nail on the head. It's doing the right thing, and it's really, really beautiful when the right thing also costs about 1% of doing it the other way. So, Mark, we're really appreciative.
Oh, yeah. And historically, I'm very familiar with CCJ over the many, many years. My wife has served on their board for a number of years and so forth, and so it's, you know, it really touches all fabrics of our community. It's amazing when you stop and think about sometimes people who do dumb things but yet need to be held accountable. And it crosses all spectrums of economics backgrounds in our community and levels of education as well. So, again, thank you and the members for the program and the service you provide.
Yeah, and I really like the 90% in 2012, 90% no recidivism for at least 1 year. I would be really curious if we start to track that out a little further and see what our recidivism number looks like as we move beyond that year. I don't know if there's any plans to do that, but I bet it's a fairly substantial number as well, where people make a mistake, they get through the program, complete the program, and then we don't hear from them again, which has to be the goal.
Right.
Mark, thanks for coming over today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Next is consideration of minutes from February 10th.
Move approval.
Second.
Motion and second. Any corrections or additions? Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Minutes pass. Consideration of personnel actions as listed.
Move approval.
Second.
A motion and a second. Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Consent agenda, please pull item number one.
Okay. Move approval consent agenda. You mean no road closures this time?
No road closures, no utility permits. Chris did a great job.
Move approval with consent agenda with noted changes.
Second.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Let's discuss consideration of no Board of Supervisors meeting on Tuesday, March 17, 2015.
I believe my spring break plans have changed, so I will be here.
Let's meet.
Okay.
You good with that?
Sounds good.
We don't need any action to meet, so let's just let that one die.
Okay.
All right. No public hearing items. Additional items. Consideration of extension to approval duration of Cameron Estates preliminary plat located in Section 19 of Franklin Township. Good morning, Charlie.
Good morning.
Morning.
Real quick, our ordinance lays out a one-year duration for approval of preliminary plats, meaning that all the final plats have to come through within that one-year period. Last year, February 11th, was when Cameron Estates was approved. They've done the first edition already. We're still waiting on the second edition based on the email that I included with this item. It doesn't sound like that's probably going to be done this calendar year, probably next calendar year at the earliest. So from staff standpoint, we would just recommend adding a one-year extension to the approval of that preliminary plat. If they're not ready to go with the last final plat by next February, we'll probably be back here again.
Outstanding. It looks like things are going well with Cameron Estates. It's just they like to have 75% of the lots they put together sold before they move on. I don't expect that this is any cause for concern. It's just the reality of the timing in this. Now, Charlie, Kurt Friedrich did say in his email to you that he would suggest that we look at possibly approving the plats for up to 5 years. Is that something that Planning and Zoning Commission can look at?
Yep, we'll probably look at that. We've got some subdivision changes that we might possibly be having coming forward this year, so we'll take a look at it then. I know for our conditional use permits, for example, those are all approved for a 5-year period, so that might be something we'd want to look at doing pretty similarly.
Okay.
Any other questions for Charlie?
Mm-hmm. Move approval of the extension of the Cameron Estates preliminary plat.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion. Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Passes. Thanks, Charlie. Yep. Next is consideration of resolution 1555 approving the final subdivision plat of, I'm not even going to try to say it.
The Chakwa.
Go, Charlie.
And I'm not even sure how to pronounce it either, and I know the Chicago. The applicants are here, and close. We've always been kind of wondering, so it's good to finally hear
it. It was close.
Anyways, this is a Chicago Bend subdivision, the property owners being Dean Russo and Carol Jacobs Peck. We're looking at an area of land that's on the north side of West Riverside Road. Southeast of the Skunk River, when about 300 feet west of Purvis Lane. The total area is about 8.5 acres. Current zoning, we have 3 zoning designations on this property. It's A1, R1, and Greenbelt Conservation. The R1 is really the area where the new vacant lots are going to be. This property is classified currently as a residential use, and it is shown as rural transitional residential on the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. And Ames is within 2 miles, and the City of Ames has approved this subdivision plat.
Okay.
Map up here, you can kind of see in the blue outline here, we'll show where the property is. We've got Grand Avenue, Highway 69, Ada Hayden Park here. This is West Riverside Road, and again, the area in blue will show you the property that is being subdivided.
What a great location. Now, is that's all out of the floodplain?
Yes, and I can show you that out here on the associated plat, but the floodplain is actually really only about 50 feet in on the property here. I'm looking at the elevations. It's a pretty steep drop-off down in the riverbank here, so most of the floodplain actually goes out into this area.
Wasn't there just a house renovated just to the east of this?
Yep, just directly to the east of that.
Yeah.
Sorry. Again, minor subdivision plat, we're looking at a split of one parcel into 3 lots and 2 outlots. The R1 zoning was approved by the Board of Supervisors on April 16th of 2013. There was 2 conditions tied to that. First condition was to work with Story County Environmental Health Department to evaluate the septic system for the existing single-family dwelling prior to any development of the site. And two, that the Greenbelt Conservation District be preserved. Regarding the evaluation of the current septic system, again, before we get into any development of the site, new houses, anything like that, that'll have to be done, and I know the applicants are aware of that. We do have a signed agreement on the rezoning that states that. So,
so one existing house and up to two additional houses?
Yep.
Okay.
Planning and Zoning Commission provides a recommendation on minor plats. They've done that. I will explain that here in a second. City of Ames does have jurisdiction over this. They did approve this plat on January 27th of this year. The plat here above kind of shows the lot layout. The current house is going to be here on lot three, the two new lots being lot one and lot two right here, these two narrow lots. The two outlots that I spoke of are on the rear here. Those are mainly put in because we have a depth-to-width ratio requirement on our lots that says that the depth of a lot cannot be in excess of three times the width. So they had to designate some outlots in the back there to allow for that. That outlot area, it's mainly going to be floodplain back there, the Greenbelt Conservation Area. That can't be built on anyways. Those two outlots are going to be sold in conjunction with the existing lots based off the notes on the plat. They just will not be buildable areas. And to be quite honest, there's no way you could build anything back there anyways. So. Any questions on the plat? We did note that there were no protective covenants submitted. We would assume there's going to be no covenants adopted with this subdivision. We did not receive a letter from the fire chief or letter from appropriate utility providers. I did look back on the rezoning file. We did receive a letter from the fire chief upon the rezoning stating that they could serve this if it was two additional lots. We didn't have anything from the utility providers. However, two new houses on this, I'm not sure that's an issue at all. We did note that Xenia is on the south side of the road, and this is in the Alliant Energy territory. And based off that, it appears that the plat meets all other requirements to be processed a minor subdivision plat. Looking at the comments from the interagency review team, there wasn't any significant comments that came out of that. There was one from the auditor's office about missing a second page on the plat. We do have that page. It was just something when we put the application out that we omitted on accident. Comments from the general public, we did send notification letters out regarding this meeting. Prior to our Planning and Zoning Commission meeting, we did receive a few comments that were on the record as part of the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting, really dealt with the traffic on West Riverside Road. There's a 35-mile-an-hour speed limit there, and there's a lot of concern that people are actually driving faster through that. Some people weren't aware that this is going to be a shared driveway access into these two lots. There's not going to be two new driveways on there. Once we told a few people that, I think it alleviated some of the concerns, but still there is some concern with that additional driveway being placed there. We did note that the property is located in FEMA flood hazard area, but as I pointed out, it's mainly back on the back portions of the lot that will not be buildable. Mm-hmm. Planning and Zoning Commission on February 4th, recommended approval of the subdivision plat to the Board of Supervisors. That was on a 3-2 vote. And your four alternatives are on the screen here above. And if there's any questions on the application, I'd be happy to answer them at this time. And like I did point out, the applicant is here if you have any questions from them.
Charlie, for you, the two Planning and Zoning Commission members that voted no, rationale?
Was because of the traffic on there. Just didn't want to see the existing driveways coming through on there. The other one had a lot to do with the septic system on there and just wanting some additional language on the approval that stated that they had to go through with that septic system evaluation. It was Nancy Miller who said it, her reasoning, and she did say it was she's not against it. She just wanted some stronger language in there
on the
septic evaluation. Yep.
Okay. Other questions for Charlie? Dean and Carol, anything you want to add for us today?
No, we addressed both of these issues from the very first meeting. It's when they came up.
Sure.
Carol
just indicated that they had addressed both these issues. Carol, just because we record this, making sure that we get it on the record.
Yes. It's been our intention from the beginning to replace our septic, so we've agreed to do that. I think it's whatever we need to do.
And Carol just indicated agreement with replacing the septic and whatever they need to do. Further questions, board?
No. I'd move approval of resolution 1555.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Charlie, anything to add before we vote? Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Resolution 1555 is approved. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Chicago. There, I said it.
I don't know why they were, you know, you suppose Chicago itself was that way and they decided that most people couldn't pronounce it, so they changed it?
Originally, the name of the skunk river.
Right, I remember that.
And it refers to the bad smell. And that's the same origin in Chicago.
Who wouldn't want to build a house there then?
I like Chicago better than skunk. Absolutely. All right. Moving on, consideration of sending the FY16 budget proposal to publication and setting a time for the public hearing on March 10th, 2015.
Well, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. It's always good to see you.
Okay, I've put together a proposed budget for you to make a decision on. The budget in front of you provides for the transition away from the current flexible benefit system. In this proposal, there are dollars for providing 90% of a single and 80% of a family plan, whatever those amounts end up being. Dollars are also calculated for flexible spending plan for vision, dental, and life disability. The result is an overall cost increase of a little over $1.1 million to the county. The transition of the community life program will also be happening at the end of FY15 budget and impacting the first quarter of FY16, at least the first quarter, we assume. In this budget, there's a 2.25% across the board rate increase, and the recommendation of the comp board was also 2.25, so that's included. The budget includes a new HR position and a new civil attorney position. The budget has total revenues of $43.7 million and total expenditures of $44.6 million, which is $906,000 more in expenses than in revenues.
Which at least one of us is not all that happy about, but we're still arm wrestling over that.
The published levy rate for the urban or countywide is $5.68. The rural is $8.86. Both of those are 29 cents higher than the current year. At the public hearing, you will be able to lower the rate or any of the 10 service areas after publication, but you cannot raise any of them.
Mm-hmm.
Our ending fund balances for the general supplemental together is 24%. County services or mental health fund, 20.8%. Rural, 16%. And secondary roads, 27.7%. The budget proposal has an overall tax askings of $2.1 million more than FY15. Budget publication is ready to go to the paper, pending the feedback from this afternoon's department head elected officials meeting. I will hand back the budgets, and if there's any glaring errors, they will point them out to me, I'm sure. We will send this to the paper on 2/20 after the departments have had a chance to review, and it will be published on 2/26, which is 12 days before the public hearing. The thing that would probably change would be the ending fund balances,
mm-hmm.
if there's a change in what people get back to me. We started at the very beginning of the public or the budget work sessions to have the public meeting on 3/10, which is a Tuesday. We talked about doing it at the board meeting due to the fact that the majority of the people that come to a night meeting are staff anyway. Totally your call. I'm open to suggestions. I do need to publish a time when I send it for publication.
And I'll just mention that Lisa, Darren, Lucy, and I went and met with Farm Bureau last week. And since Farm Bureau has been the primary public entity that has expressed real interest in when we do our budget hearing, just presented it to them. And the feedback that I received was they understand completely doing it at 10 a.m. And, in fact, support that. Did you hear anything different than that?
Different, yeah.
The other thing I'd like to just throw out here, because it's what Lisa and I are still wrestling over, it does not change what we would publish, but it could potentially change what we ultimately approve, and that is there a $4.2 million payment to the region, is that right?
No, there's a $3 million payment to the region in the FY16 budget. The FY15 I'm reestimating to be right at a $2.5 million payment, and I just put a number in for FY16 for payment to the region with no real calculation from the region added in there, just this is what we could pay up to this amount of money.
Absolutely. And so what Lisa and I are going to talk about a little further is right at the end of FY15, do we want to pay a little more to the region and then have a little less budgeted for FY16, which theoretically could help take care of that $900,000 that I'm not particularly fond of.
Or, quite frankly, not budget dollars to the region for next fiscal year.
Yeah.
Knowing we're going to amend those dollars in when we get closer to knowing what that amount's going to be.
But those are conversations we'll have during the budget hearing. The other thing that I would request, Lisa, before we get to a motion to go ahead and set this is, right now in the State House, there's conversation on changing comp board roles, responsibilities, up to and including maybe doing away with comp board. But the primary impetus there is apparently some counties don't address what elected officials make, what the raises are. I want to make sure that we continue to hit it head on. You hit it here today. It's a proposed 2.25% increase for all elected officials. That's the same as we're talking about for the rest of the staff. Can you please make sure that we work in that conversation to our budget hearing on the 10th?
Right, because have you received the comp board recommendation, the official one?
No. Usually we get that.
I haven't seen it.
You might have to do an outreach. I will make sure it gets on your agenda to at least acknowledge that they've met. Okay. And then, yes, in the budget hearing, I will address the...
Yeah, I mean, let's make sure we go over and above addressing that.
We've done for years.
Which I know we've done for years, but now that it's at the State House, let's just make sure that we're going over and above.
Just in comment and follow up, you were correct as far as the discussion at the legislature. The ISAC board and our lobbyist really felt that they didn't think that there would be much traction on this, but it's certainly something out there. This was addressed to the supervisors at our supervisor school last Thursday, but it's something I think that we need to continue to pay close attention to as we move forward. A lot of it is that a lot of legislatures don't really understand the whole framework of the compensation board and what it does. And we may recall that we had a lot of new people coming in for the first time. So a lot of it is about education and educating the legislators about how it's done and as it moves forward.
Very good. Any other questions or comments for Lisa? All right, we need a motion setting the date and time and authorizing publication of this.
I would move that we set March 10th at 10 a.m. as part of our regular board meeting as our public hearing, and also to approve sending this to publication.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Lisa, any other comments?
The only thing I just wanted to hear, if I heard Lisa correctly, she's saying that the motion here is just going to set the date and time, but there could be some changes based on the staff input that we may have this afternoon. So do I need to include that in the motion, that subject to any?
All you need to do right now is set a time.
Okay.
For the public hearing and authorize sending it to publication.
Okay.
If there's any changes, obviously you guys will get notification of what the public notice will look like.
Okay.
The final draft.
Okay.
Per
okay.
se.
So my original motion then is okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Further discussion?
No.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Budget hearing is set for 10 a.m. on March 10th with authorization to send our proposed budget to publication. Lisa, anything else? Thank you, ma'am. Next item is acknowledge receipt of proposals for the C2C project and establish time frame for review. Leanne. And Charlie.
Well, then I just took it off. Good morning, Leanne Harder, Story County Outreach,
County Outreach and Special Projects Manager. What you have before, what is before the board this morning is kind of a twofold item. One is establishing the time frame for review on the C2C project. I'm going to do that one first, and then we'll tell you what proposals are. There's not official bid bonds and all that, so you don't have a bid tab sheet. It's just acknowledging receipt of those. On the agenda, I did attach the estimated time frame. Today, obviously, is when the RFPs were due at 9 o'clock. And then this week, remainder of this week through Thursday, we'll have a project team, and I'll share those names with you here shortly, review the RFPs and make a determination whether or not there's benefit to bringing the consultants to the board next Tuesday. If collectively the project team feels that one just sticks out and we don't need additional input, we'll skip that step. But it may be that next Tuesday you'll hear from some potential consultants at the board meeting. On the 3rd of March, then, we'll be back in front of you to actually have the contract or the consultant selected and then begin contract discussions over the next couple weeks. And then March 17th is when the contract would be signed and will project will officially kick off. Are there any questions on the time frame?
Nope.
So one of your actions today will be establish that time frame for review. That was spelled out in the RFP, so the consultants are aware of it as well. The other item is to acknowledge a receipt of the sealed RFPs, and I went ahead and took them out of the boxes so I could be a little bit more graceful than I was last time doing this. The first one is from RDG of Des Moines, RDG Planning and Design. And I'm not going to go over the amounts and stuff. Let's just acknowledge it again. The second one that we did receive, I do want to mention, too, they were required to meet certain requirements set forth in the RFP, and when we go through and look at these, we'll make sure that those are satisfied. Second one is from JEO.
JDO?
JEO.
Oh, JEO. Okay.
Technically, I think, yeah.
And then the last one is MSA. And I believe this is out of their Ankeny office.
Good.
So we do have three proposals that will be evaluated. The project team will likely consist of the following individuals. And they'll receive an email from me or a personal phone call yet today. Charlie and Ryan from Planning and Development, myself, Darren Moon, Story County Engineer, Kara Williams with Story County Conservation, Matt Boyk, Story County GIS Coordinator, Aaron Steele, who is the current Chair of the Planning and Zoning Commission for Story County, Tony Gustafson with Iowa DOT or representative, Phil Mesher with Iowa DOT but works with the Ames MPO, Kelly Diekman with the City of Ames, again, or his representative. Drew Camp with AEDC, Story County Outreach. Keith Morgan with Emergency Management. And Deb Schildroth, current title, Story County Community Services. If there are any other names you wanted us to add, we'd be glad to. The idea is to keep this one a little bit smaller. This is not the task force that's working with us. This is really the nuts and bolts internal team that will be primarily in contact with the selected consultant. Are there any questions?
Questions. First of all, could I have a motion acknowledging receipt of the three RFPs?
So moved.
Second.
Motion and a second. Toot. Aye. Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Acknowledged. Second, direction to Leanne and Charlie on the team that Leanne has laid out to go back and review and a timeline to review those RFPs.
That was the estimated timeline is pretty much what you had outlined here, you know, going from January through March.
To review the RFPs, Leanne is suggesting through the 19th so that right. If we needed to get something on the agenda for next Tuesday, we would have time to do that.
Okay, good. Move approval of the suggested timeline.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion? Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Team and timeline for review of the RFPs is established. And, Leanne, just for our knowledge, so we get through this process of selecting or at least hearing from those who have submitted RFPs, then tell me what happens from there. Clearly, there's going to be some nuts and bolts to pull this together.
Right. Once the contract is solidified and the contractor consultant's on board and the process is underway, my role will kind of phase out to some level of a degree. I'll still be a participant on the project team, but planning and development under Charlie's leadership will take over the scheduling the meetings with the project team and the, I cannot think of what the other team is, but the larger task force team, really guiding the project through. I'll continue my involvement as a participant on that team.
But you've really been carrying the ball up to this point, and once we get the contract, you hand it off to planning and development to really be the day-to-day manager of the process. Okay. Any questions there, Board?
No.
No.
Do we need to take any other action today?
No, please.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Great.
Next item is consideration of Story County policy for website linking. Then this is after the seven-day review.
God, I was next. I'm sorry. Leanne Harder again. I did put a revised policy on the board's agenda that showed some additions from emergency management. We did reflect the conservation changes last week. There were some questions brought forward by county staff as to what does this mean when county staff places links. This is not for county staff. This is just when Story County gets a request to place a third-party vendor's link on the website that they would have to follow this process.
And at the end of the day, if there's any question, it still resides with this board to make the final decision.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Questions?
Final questions for me?
No, I just...
No, I'd move approval of the policy for website linking after we have had our seven-day review.
Yep.
So,
second.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion?
No, these two changes were just very minor here and more wordsmithing than anything else for clarification, so it looks good.
Absolutely, it does.
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. A website linking policy is adopted. Next item is consideration of bid tabulation and awarding of contract to McCully Culvert Incorporated out of Barnes City, Iowa. Darren Moon.
Correct. And this is a follow-up from the letting last week. The total bid amount from McCully was $175,422. Our engineer's estimate was $161,000. An actual budget amount, which is even less, is $150,000. Keep in mind that's from a year and a half ago, and that we budget that before we even know what size the culvert's going to be, so there's always some adjustments. So over budget, it's around $25,000. We came in $10,000 under on another box culvert out of this fiscal year, so really we're about $15,000 short. I still recommend moving forward with this, with looking at other county lettings for box culverts. Prices are definitely going up.
Well, and the other bids we received
were
substantially more than this.
Somewhat frightening. So I would definitely recommend moving forward with that. Our budget can absorb this. I anticipate somewhere in the neighborhood of at least $50,000 in savings just from fuel in our current year budget, so we can absorb the $15,000 easily. Just to make you aware, we do have another letting today. The Hickory Grove Bridge gets let through the DOT. That one could have a considerable overrun for two reasons. One, we budget it as a FEMA reimbursement project. So we estimated 15% local cost, where now we're federal aid bridge funds, that's 20%. So we're already 5% over. And with the way other lettings are going, I would anticipate being overestimate on that too, possibly. So expect some more overruns there, but I think we need to move forward with this one.
Now that we got Mike Cox sitting here, we never brought it up, but, do you ever think about a barge type of thing to allow equipment to kind of go across there, and then we could have a little slight fee for additional revenue?
Who's going to run the barge?
Oh, well, I might be able to get a tad. I didn't mean to... cover you too much. But actually, this sounds what you're asking for, and for us to accept a low bid here, knowing full well that we're slightly short of where we are. So I would move approval of the awarding the contract to McCulley Culvert of Barnes City, Iowa, in the amount of $175,422.25.
Second.
Motion and second. Further discussion. Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Bid is awarded. Next item is consideration of purchase agreement with Ziegler Incorporated for the purchase of a Trail King trailer in the amount of $18,500.
Correct. This is a item we had in our FY16 equipment budget, and we were always looking to buy things out of the current year if we see the opportunity. Like I mentioned, we know the fuel costs are low enough. We're going to see enough savings to absorb this year. Total cost of $18,500. And, yeah, with that, I take any questions.
No, it's an item we talked about as part of the FY16 budget. I'm appreciative of pulling it forward. Now we don't have to have it in the FY16 budget.
I would move approval of the purchase of the Trail King trailer from Ziegler for $18,500.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Purchase of the Trail King trailer is approved.
Mr. Chair, let me ask one question since we have Darren here. A citizen just asked me the question about how are we standing right now with salt and so forth as a result of the more recent snow and so forth. I kind of thought we were in still good shape, but wanted to hear from you.
We have plenty, and I'm hoping to have some cost savings there out of this fiscal year too. So, but we're probably half full in our salt shed right now, so we're doing good there, and the forecast doesn't look too bad.
Right. We're going to, during state tournament, we're going to send everything for the south.
Right.
Okay. Okay.
No, we're doing good.
Very good. Thanks, Darren. Next item is departmental reports, and we're going to start with conservation, Mike Cox, but we're going to take a two-minute recess first. All right, we're back in session. Departmental reports, conservation, Mike Cox. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Good morning, gentlemen. I guess first off, as far as updates, let me first just address the Dakin's Lake project. As you know, we've didn't quite hit our mark last year with progress, and so we're running a little bit behind on that. We are still planning for a May opening, probably be the end of May. We haven't set a date yet, but that is still our target right now. As far as progress there goes, the restroom is essentially complete. Work left to or yet remaining includes finishing the shelter. It includes landscaping and some road work as well. Some of the roads that were laid, the contractor needs to come back in and add some more gravel, widen some, etc. So those are the significant pieces yet to do. This week they're bringing the lift station and sewer online and doing some tests with that on Thursday. So we are still making progress there, and again, still hope to have a May opening there. Another project update is our WIRB, or Watershed Improvement Review Board grant, and Iowa DNR grant for the Hickory Grove Lake Watershed. As you know, we received combined about $450,000 for grant funding from those two organizations, as well as the county here and Environmental Health, several other partners. To do a project at the Dakin's Lake, in the Dakin's Lake watershed, that would include this replacement of septic systems and stream bank protection, livestock exclusion, etc. So that project, we've got the design documents at 60% design. So those are under review right now by DNR and the WIRB board. So we expect to still move forward with that and have a project ready for construction this summer. So that's moving forward nicely. Speaking of watershed work, you do know that the county submitted another grant request to IDOLS watershed. It's called a WQI project, Water Quality Initiative Project through IDOLS. We did that cooperatively with Prairie Rivers of Iowa, RC&D. And that project would fund a watershed coordinator, would fund outreach program, and would also fund conservation practices on farmland. So that project, including the conservation work, it was about a $900,000 project, so grant request. Very positive outlook on us getting that grant. Staff there would be supervised, hired by, employed by Prairie Rivers of Iowa, not the county, with close project oversight by the county for our portions of that project. We did, prior to submitting that grant, we did get collaboration from DuPont, which is a very positive effort in getting that grant and moving that project forward. They're excited to be part of this project, and we look forward to working with them. And then Heartland Co-op came on board and said they would partner with us. We did have several other. Iowa Water Alliance came on board, Iowa Soybean Association, Corn Growers Association, several other organizations came on board and said that they would help with that project. So, again, we look we should know about that project fairly soon. If we're awarded, then we'll have a contract date or estimated contract date of May 1st. So again, we should find out about that fairly soon. Believe the board is also aware we received a SERPTA grant for roughly $180,000 for paving a portion of the Heart of Iowa Trail, that portion near Huxley. That's approximately 1 mile stretch. Half of that's owned by Huxley, half of that's owned by Story County. We received the grant from SERPTA for that amount, and because there were multiple funding sources with that, DOT was willing to essentially transfer our grant over to Huxley, and that they will administer that project. So the Huxley City Council took action, and they are in agreement to manage the project, so that money will go directly to Huxley. The project is funded completely, as far as a construction estimate anyway, and so they'll be managing that moving forward, and expect to have construction maybe even later this summer, this coming summer. Let's see, a couple weeks ago I visited, went down to the state capitol with one of our other board members, Ted Tedesco, and then ex-board member Joyce Hornstein, and visited with our legislators about the 3/8 of 1 cent sales tax increase for the I Will project. And I think you're familiar with that. Hopefully that would come forward. Be nice if it came forward this year in legislature, but that's to be determined, of course. So we encourage any support you guys might have on that as that moves forward. That will provide sustained funding to all the counties in the state. That 3/8 of 1 cent increase would be divided out on a formula basis, and a certain portion of that would come to counties, similar to the REAP project. And every year through REAP, the last few years through REAP, we've been getting anywhere from 30 to 40,000 annually, and this project would increase that significantly. So it could be a very important source of funding looking forward. We also did, a couple weeks ago, sponsored a trout fishing day at Ada Hayden, if anyone saw that, or I don't know if anyone attended that. It was a great event. DNR every year stocks Ada Hayden with trout, and they came in and put 2,200 fish in the lake, and there were probably probably 300 people there fishing. And lots of first fish caught, which is always one of my highlights, to see kids out there, and maybe it's the first time they've ever fished, or maybe it's the first time they've ice fished, and to have that experience of catching a fish, and it's just incredible. So very nice to see that. Good support. Jack supported the event. Hy-Vee supported the event. Ames Anglers supported the event. Lots of people that came out and had a great time. So we look forward to continuing that in the future. As far as our events and programs go, just looking forward here, we've got our Spring Partners Festival on May 3rd. This year it's a pollinators theme, if you will. We are partnering with the Blank Park Zoo on a pollinators program and promoting that, trying to get local, if you will, kind of native gardens or rain gardens, pollinator gardens. And so we're promoting that, and we'll be doing that at this event. Wonderful event. We've also got the Region 5. We call it Region 5. It's the National Association of Interpreters. And they have a 7-state region here in the Midwest. That conference is coming to Ames in March, and we're coordinating that event. So be a tremendous opportunity. I think there's 200 to 300 people that will attend. It rotates through the 7-state region, so it only comes to Iowa every 7 years, so it's nice to get it here. And so a lot of our staff have coordinating roles on bringing that event to fruition. So that's wonderful, a wonderful event to have, and a good opportunity for us to showcase some of the work that we're doing. Other than that, I guess lastly, if anyone's interested in coming out this Thursday evening, can do come out and do a snowshoe hike with us. We've got an event this Thursday evening. It's called Shoes and Soup, and it's Thursday at 5:30. And it'll be a great opportunity to come out, even though we don't have a lot of snow. We do have enough snow, and so it'll be a good opportunity to come out and put your snowshoes on. We'll provide the snowshoes and go for a hike and then have soup dinner afterwards. So if you...
Is that at McFarland?
It's at McFarland. Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. So other than that, we've got a lot of other programs coming up, and I'm sure you guys get this regular calendar of events, but we've got a caving program for kids at McFarland. Of course, we don't have real caves, but we'll simulate that. We've got that's a wonderful program. We've got a nature riding program coming up, and let's see, March's Owls, which is the next Older, Wiser, Livelier program series, is on the Emerald Ash Borer, and that'll be a good one if anyone's interested in coming out and learning about that. That's on March 3rd. So, any questions?
No. Thanks for the information.
Keep up the
Absolutely.
Work.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mike.
Thanks.
Now we're to other reports, and this is an update and discussion of non-union employee insurance benefits. Alyssa Wignall and Debbie Dean. Okay. Good morning.
Good morning.
We were asked to come to the board and discuss what we've done so far. We don't have any answers for everybody. Answer any questions you three may have. So I think what I'll do is go ahead and let kind of Debbie from she's our broker, kind of give her what we've done, where we've, the quotes we've been able to get, how we've been able to get them, and then I can update on anything else if that's okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead and start
okay.
there.
Great.
Good morning.
Good morning.
What we is it on
that? It might not be.
Yeah, I think it is.
Yep.
I think what
it's
we've
up.
Done so far is we have solicited quotes from United Healthcare and Coventry Healthcare of Iowa. Alyssa solicited a quote from Wellmark to companion the renewal that you already have from the ISAC division of Wellmark. And we have received some preliminary numbers from United, and we anticipate tomorrow, probably no later than Friday, receiving preliminary numbers from Coventry Healthcare as well. And the reason that I use the term preliminary is because these numbers at this point are somewhat soft based upon the type of participation that we would have if the plan were to move to an alternate carrier. So therefore, the pricing would be different if the population that would be moving would be in the 250-plus employee range versus the 150, if mm-hmm. you will, or even lesser employee range. So at this point, we're continuing to monitor those quotes and to wait for further guidance to know how to direct these carriers with respect to the type of population that we believe would enroll in the plan.
Of course, that is a static number at this point. I mean, with still uncertainty because of the way that we go through open enrollment and so forth. So the question that I would have is, after we receive what we would consider to be a guesstimate, is there flexibility that would probably be built in, assuming we would select one of the other carriers? Would they be asking us to stay close to that particular threshold, or if we didn't, they would have another figure, another number, so that we had something to compare, say, a range of, like you mentioned, 150. Let's say if it was only 100. So, I think it would be important to have some benchmarks, if at all possible.
That's exactly accurate. Both Coventry and United Health, will offer a traditional platform which has become, quote, the norm in 2015 for a situation just as this.
Right.
And so they would price based upon percentage enrollment.
Mm-hmm.
And if we move into a higher percentage enrollment, then the pricing would go down. If we move into a lower percentage enrollment, the pricing would go up. However, it is possible that we may, as we know more, be able to negotiate a fixed price regardless of enrollment. And that would be the goal, would be once we know the direction that the county will go and we know the direction with respect to the population that will be eligible, then we could seek to maybe ask them to move off of that tiered pricing structure onto a fixed commitment regardless of enrollment. But those negotiations really can't happen at this point. So at this point, yes, it would be based upon a percentage of the population that enrolls.
Okay.
And you would have that information in advance.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so what we know, and Alyssa, just help me with this, we know what our rates through ISAC would be if we continue to utilize ISAC, regardless of, Wayne, how many people we have sign up or don't have sign up. We know what that rate's going to be. Now we're looking to see what the rates would be with United and Coventry. And then, Alyssa, I think you also solicited a bid through Wellmark because they won't quote through a broker. Is that right? So talk to us about that one.
The quote that I received from Wellmark, you know, they really look at our current participation. It's not competitive. It's way more than the ISAC plan.
Okay.
I mean, the single rates were in the $900 to $1,000 a month premium.
Okay, and we've seen, Debbie, we've seen a preliminary quote from United. Was it competitive with the ISAC?
It's actually very competitive, if not more so competitive, but that is dependent upon
the population.
An entire population becoming eligible for, and then based upon what the arrangement works out to be in terms of how much is paid for by the employer. United is one of the carriers, and there may be, Coventry may turn out to be the same way, but United is one that will step up to the plate, if you will, and say, once we know what the population is going to be and once we know what the contribution is going to be on the part of the employer, we'll fix the price for you, regardless of how many enroll. But I hesitate to push more with any carrier at this point until you all have had an opportunity to further your process. Right.
And so that we're clear, that preliminary, very competitive quote that we got from United is based on a population of eligible people of about 250, and it's based on that 80, 85, and 90% contribution from the county, which, Board, clearly we don't know that that's where we're going to end up, because we don't know where we're going to end up with our bargaining units, and until we do, we only have a population of about 150, right, which would change everything.
It would definitely change the numbers. And again, once we know more, we can go back and negotiate further with both carriers, both United and Coventry.
Right, and so the baseline that we have is we know where we are with ISAC, and we know that Wellmark's direct bid is not competitive with ISAC.
Right.
Okay. Other questions today?
No, the only comment I would make is that I know there's been some concern that the board would drag their feet on making a decision until it was closer towards the end of the fiscal year. I don't see any reason why we would do that. Lisa's got the numbers, good or bad, that we're gonna, or that she's plugged into our proposed budget. Rick, like you said, we're kind of in a holding pattern, waiting to see what the bargaining units are gonna do. So, I think as soon as we can get some numbers put together, we're gonna make a decision. Unless I missed my mark, I think the decision is gonna be made by the board, from a recommendation made by Debbie and Alyssa. Yeah. So that's kind of where we're at.
Does it help, or can we move up open enrollment at all?
Well, I actually think we should.
Yeah,
under the circumstances. This is an unusual, circumstance to be in, and I see no reason why we shouldn't do that.
Here's my plan with open enrollment. The open enrollment period may be the same in May, but they will have employee meetings substantially before then, so employees will get the information, be able to look at it. Typically we have open enrollment the first week or two in May, and that was mainly done so we could get everything processed and get it to payroll, so all the payroll changes could be made the second payroll in June. We waited as long as we possibly could. There's nothing that says we can't move it up as long as we're ready.
Mm-hmm.
We can't have that until we have all the information from the bargaining units. So I don't want to say we could have open enrollment the second week in April right now, because we don't know.
Yeah.
How soon.
Right, but it is reasonable
made.
To say we would move as expeditiously
yes,
as we
right.
could
right. exactly.
toward providing information. But
right.
so a couple points. One, the budget that we approved Lisa sending out today has the ISAC numbers. It has our best guesstimates of the ISAC numbers based on where we
highest,
think our participation
yeah,
right
side.
where we think our participation would be. So we're good from a budgetary point of view. The other thing that has not been mentioned here, and Paul, I think you're absolutely right, ultimately this decision is going to be made based on a recommendation from Alyssa and Debbie. And it's going to be made by the board, and I would just insert one little thing in between those two, and that is I believe that this board ought to go out and get as much feedback from employees as possible between that recommendation and a final decision of the board. At the end of the day, it's the three of us deciding where we go and who we go with, but I feel really strongly that we need to get as much feedback as possible from those who are going to be impacted, but we can't do that until we know where the bargaining units are going to come down. And so we are to the point now, and Alyssa, just help me if I'm wrong, so we're looking for some preliminary quotes from Coventry that we expect to get this week. And then we're really in a holding pattern while this thing goes through with the bargaining units, and we can see where we really are so that we know exactly what we would be offering to our employees so that they can comment on something real.
Right.
Did I miss on any of that?
No. One thing I do want to – you had asked to run some figures, whether it's 80%, 85%, 90%, just to put into perspective – 80%, our most expensive plan is our $500 deductible. And our single rate through ISAC is $782, and our family plan is $1,758 a month. So if you look at spending or doing an 80-20, the employer on a single plan would pay $625.60 a month. The employee would pay $156.40 a month. on a family plan, the employer would pay $1,406 a month. The employee would pay around $350 a month. To put those in annual perspective, employer contributions on a single plan would be about $7,500 a year. On a family plan would be about $17,000 a year.
All right, so that I'm clear.
That's on the most expensive
plan. On our most expensive, best plan, mm-hmm. you know, lowest deductible, best copay, best everything, you're talking about an employee being able to get an individual plan for $156 a month, which, if I'm not mistaken, that would almost be covered by what we're talking about doing with the vision, dental, and life and disability.
It would be if they didn't take dental or vision.
If they didn't
okay.
take it.
And then a full family plan, again, the best family plan we have, would be about $350 a month to an employee. Now go to the other end. Go to what we were talking about as the 90% contribution from based on ISAC.
The $2,000 individual deductible is our most cost-effective plan. We have quite a few individuals on that just because it's, you know, the deductible is only, if, you know, for hospitalization or other deductible items. So if we look at the 90%, the employer would pay roughly $570, and the employee would pay a little over $60 a month. For family, the employer would pay about $1,280, and the employee would pay about $140, give or take. So if I look at annual contributions, it'd be about $6,800 for a single, and it'd be about $15,300 for family.
But again, looking at it from our employees' point of view.
Not 15,000, you mean 1,500?
15,000 a year.
Contribution from the
employer contributions for that.
Yeah, 15,000.
But looking at it from the employees' point of view, if you just wanted the most basic health insurance that we could offer, and again, this is with the ISAC plans, an individual could pick it up for $60 a month. Personal contribution, and you could get a family plan for $140 a month. That, I mean, guys, that's strong. That's really, really good. And I think it's fair to say at this point, those numbers, Alyssa, that you just talked about are really worst case scenario because we know that's where we are.
Right.
We might be able to do better than that.
Yep. And on that, the additional, you know, you talk about the additional flex money, that we talked about where you'd have the mandatories come off of it. You'd have the dental and vision. The $180.48, the mandatories that would come off that were figured to come up with that number would be the mandatories for an employee that makes $100,000 a year. It'd be $35.19, and those rates are locked in for next year. And then we used the family dental plan one, which is the most expensive plan, and then our family vision to come up with those figures. If you have an individual that takes the $2,000 individual plan single with the extra that you put into that, they if they didn't take dental or vision, you know, depending if they take single dental, single vision, the remainder looks like they wouldn't pay for anything out of pocket.
But so if we go with that plan, every one of our employees is going to get to make a choice with about $150, and they can either take the top line vision and dental, or they can get the $150 a month cash to use how they see fit for their.
Yep. The only question that we have right now, you know, that employees might ask is that IPERS covered? It depends. We would send it down to IPERS to get a determination on that. If it's done across the county, everybody has the ability to access that. IPERS has come down so far that it's IPERS covered. They get to make their own decisions. If we would have certain employees that would go with something different and only 50% of our employees get this, then it doesn't sound like.
And I would just suggest to any of our employees, as they're putting together their financial plan for the next year or for their IPERS coverage, don't plan on any of this being IPERS covered. We'll battle for whatever portion we can get to be IPERS covered, but the reality is those days are gone, and so don't plan on any of this being IPERS covered. Anything else we need to talk about today? Any other questions for Debbie and Alyssa? Alyssa, we appreciate your leadership getting through what is a tough situation. I made the comment last time that not only were we near the end, we weren't even near the middle. Well, I think we're near the middle now. I clearly we've got a lot to wait on, a lot of things out of our control. But we're to the point where we've done everything we can do, and now we're waiting on some others to make some decisions,
right,
and figure out where we're headed. You've done a great job. Debbie, you've been a great resource to us. We're so appreciative of your expertise and going out and finding the information for us. We'll look forward to seeing what Coventry comes back with and then having you guys put together some recommendations so that we can get some information out to the employees of what things might look like. Wayne, anything?
No.
Thank you.
Both.
Liaison assignments and committee meeting updates. Wayne.
Briefly, no liaison assignment, but just a couple of things. Last Thursday was a statewide supervisors meeting, and I just wanted to report I thought it was just an outstanding meeting of the supervisors. We were very blessed to have, Chief Justice Katie, who came and addressed the supervisors, and primarily it was looking at the guidelines for court facilities in throughout all 99 counties, laid out a plan that had been worked on with a committee of representatives from ISAC as well and people from the Justice Committee. And I think the guidelines was discussed at our ISAC board meeting on Friday. And with some possibilities of us adding just a couple amendments to that original plan, basically just adding the idea that not only is it for court security, but it should be for all county run buildings and so forth. And then under the membership category, it was suggested that the local chair of the Board of Supervisors primarily would be the representative on this courthouse security group. But while they listed in the proposal several people, it gave us flexibility that if we thought we needed to add any other interested parties, that we could certainly do so. So I thought that that was extremely very, very appropriate. So I do think that the scope of what has happened around the state in the area is that they are hoping that the courtroom safety committee has a plan that they have to submit later this year as to where counties are, and I think this is going to help the process quite a bit, and they believe that there's a lot can be done without having to spend quite a bit of dollars initially to make this happen, but hopefully we're going to be moving toward a more secure court facility as well as secure county offices, county buildings for all of the employees in public. And I think it was important that the concept of the public be factored in as well as the employees. And I thought it was an excellent discussion. I know Supervisor Toot was there to hear that presentation as well. And then just a couple other things in the agenda that later that day, we were fortunate to have Governor Branstad there. Governor Branstad talked about several components of what he is proposing. He did speak in support of the fuel tax increase and the background work along with that. I think he kind of shied a little bit away from the mental health funding proposal with the fact that it was not mentioned in his budget, roughly about $46 million that will come out of the system. But I think overall it was a good exchange, and I think an indication that he's really understanding the dilemma that counties are in and want to work with ISAC as well as the legislature on moving the state forward in so many different areas, as well as economic development initiatives and so forth. And then we also had DOT Director Paul Trambino speak. Again, he did an excellent job talking about where we were with the road use tax and the various options that's on the table. And he says if at any time He's very optimistic that we might be able to get something done, but until it happens and it's actually voted in and the governor signs it, he didn't want to get our hopes up too far. But he says the stars seem to be aligning for that to take place. We also had Sue Rich, who came before us from Washington County. She was the head of the Veterans Affairs Commission, and the Veterans Affairs Commission has asked to join ISAC as an affiliate. The ISAC Board of Directors approved a resolution that will be brought before the General Assembly later this fall, in which it will be up to the General Assembly to vote them in, and then they would have all the rights and privileges of any other affiliate if that becomes a reality. So that was pretty much what we had. And then on Friday, of course, I had the ISAC Board of Directors meeting, which was an excellent meeting. Again, it went over the budget for this upcoming year and talked about the courthouse security, and we heard the legislative report, the same as what we had from Jamie Cashman, also from Lucas Binken and Bill Heckroff. So all in all, I think there's a lot of hope and optimism that we're going to be able to accomplish some things, but we also need to be vigilant and stay in tune with our legislators so that some of the things that might crop up at the last minute that could be detrimental to counties in our home rule philosophy, that we want to make sure that we're following the process throughout the year. So all in all, it was a good couple days.
Outstanding. Well, Wayne, we sure appreciate your representation of us so heavily in ISAC. And, Paul, I'm glad you were able to make it down. I was here dealing with insurance, amazingly enough. Paul, anything from you?
Pass.
Public forum number two. This is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items not on today's agenda. The board may not take any action on the comments due to the requirements of the open meeting law, but we may do so in the future. Anybody wishing to address the board? Seeing no one move into the microphone, announcements to supervisors. Wayne, anything today?
Nope.
Paul?
Pass.
Pass from me. I'd take a motion to adjourn.
So moved. Second.
Motion is second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. We are adjourned. Thank you, everybody.